Blog Talk.
Hello, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. I'm so glad you're all going to be listening to the show tonight because it is a live, wonderful show. You won't believe the subject. Before we get there, I'm going to just tell everyone the music you're listening to is Music Box Dancer by composer Frank Mills, who has given the Judy Joy Jones Show permission to use that as our theme song. Thank you, Frank. Also, I'd like to give a shout-out to Blog Talk Radio. Without Blog Talk Radio, we wouldn't be doing this right now, and I really, really am turned on to them and their work in making us one planet, a small, interconnected family. Thanks, Blog Talk. I have a show coming up next week. Actually, I have about three. If you want to check the schedule, it's just you go to Judy Joy Jones Shows, and you're going to find some people. On Sunday night, we have a 13-year-old singer from Australia, and she actually is making her debut on our show, and we're really, really, really excited to have her. She is already getting known in her country, but she's just new to our country. Her name is Amelia Bloom, and she will be our special guest, so don't miss that. That's Sunday night. So, without too much more time going by, because our time is short, and I really want to get into the subject tonight, I heard our guest, Christopher Moon, recently on the talk show Coast to Coast. He was talking about a telephone to the dead that would enable us to actually call our relatives on the other side and find out what's going on and where did they hide this and where's the money and whatever we want to talk about. But I had heard about this many years ago and just was waiting for it actually to happen, and it sounds like it has happened. Whenever Thomas Edison was crossing over, when he right before he died, he was actually working on an invention, Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb. He was working on a telephone so that he could call his deceased mother. And at the time, he was so ahead of his time that I'm sure he was looked upon as whatever. But actually, he was just right with it. He was just kind of paving the way. And so is Christopher Moon, who is also a Blog Talk radio host. He has a show here. And he is the editor and president of an e-zine called hauntedtimes.com. Excellent. Check it out. I was just really getting into it, hauntedtimes.com. And anyone that wants to know more about this can certainly call in tonight, find out, talk to him. The number for the call-in number is 347-326-9915. That's 347-326-9915. And if you want to talk in the chat room, go right ahead. I've got it open and running. And without any more ado, let's bring him on. Hello?
Hi, Judy.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. I'm just really, really excited about this show tonight after hearing you talk about this recently, actually, on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was a great show. I've actually been on there twice now and really enjoyed my time.
Oh, you've been on it twice, and I just happened. That was on a Sunday night, and the host was not George Norrie. It was someone else, but I know that I was just wanting more and more, you know, like I wanted to find out more immediately. Would you like to tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what led you to the path you're on now? Chris, do you go by Christopher or Chris?
Chris is fine. You know, I actually really got started in the paranormal very young. I had my first conscious paranormal experience when I was 7 years old, and moved into a house in a little county just off of Denver, Colorado, called Inglewood, and actually had an experience where I was visited by a little Indian boy, for lack of a better term. He used to appear at the base of my bed at the just stand there and stare down at me, and we used to have these back and forth staring matches at night, and until eventually I started speaking up and trying to get some contact to go both ways, and eventually he disappeared, and the haunting kicked up in the house. We had missing objects and pianos that played themselves and all kinds of interesting things, but it kind of got me on the path at that point, and I was a musician for many years, and I had the opportunity to tour and explore some of these purportedly haunted locations on my own with some, by today's standards, antiquated equipment, and really gathered some great evidence. And once I stopped playing and touring, ended up coming back and not knowing what to do with all this information that I had at the time, because we were still considered complete outcasts and lunatics for doing what we did. We actually ended up wanting to put up a website with all the evidence we collected, the stories and things along those lines. And it somehow morphed into kind of an online magazine that we called Ghost Hunter Magazine. And when we posted this up, we were really shocked because people from all over the world started writing us and telling us, you know, I had a very similar story, or I have this piece of evidence that's much like what you have, and things along those lines. So we kind of became a self-help group for everybody out there. Mm-hmm. And long story short, I'd opened that with one of my old road managers, and eventually he moved away, and I went to my father, who's a devout Catholic and very skeptical, and we'd had the battles throughout the years about, you know, his side and my side, and I asked him, do you want to go into business with me and open up a print magazine that deals with the paranormal?
Oh.
And he said, I'd love to, because I want to prove that you're crazy. And we opened up this magazine. It did start online, but we in October of 2005 went to print and released our first issue. And within our next issue that we put out, we were actually internationally distributed through Ingram.
Oh.
So we made a huge jump at that point, and we were in all the major bookstores, obviously. So. We have been around since October 2005. We've put out issues quarterly, every 3 months since then, and I believe that now we are considered the world's largest paranormal magazine. So we're very proud of that, and that
wow.
leads up to what I do. But I've been an investigator for many, many years, and I actually really considered myself a true investigator probably right around the age of 16 when I started gathering a lot of this evidence didn't know quite what to do with it, but got a lot of interesting things that I would show people on a consistent basis.
Well, did you ever foresee, did you have any visions of this telephone or anything like what it is kind of turning into back then when
no,
you were like that young, or did you?
Not at all.
At all.
Know, I've always had a quote-unquote psychic or medium ability.
Right.
That I've kept very much in the closet.
Sure.
When I was an investigator, people used to ask me, do you have psychic ability? And I would say, oh, no, none at all. Because I was really, I knew that would hurt my research as a scientific investigator. But even in those times, how I would communicate with spirits, just hearing them in rooms and being able to talk and hear them respond to me and things along those lines, I knew at that point that that was something that was very much mine. No one else around me was having that same ability. So when we started going in and doing these beginning EVP sessions, which of course started with reel-to-reel recorders and then moved into tape recorders, and then
would you mind telling people that don't know what the EVP is?
Sure. No, it's called electronic voice phenomena, and it's the practice of capturing disembodied voices on a recorder, on tape, or on digital. And you know, at the time, we started collecting these on a very consistent basis on all these different mediums, and it was amazing. I was just so happy that we could ask a question and get a response back on tape.
Wow.
I had no idea at that point that we would ever be able to have true two-way communication where everyone could hear the actual voices coming through and responding.
Wow, you are ahead of your time. Does it feel rather lonely sometimes since, you know, you're one of the few people that I have actually heard talking about this? I
well,
guess you're
you know,
you're one of the pioneers, Chris.
Well, it's interesting because I have to stress to people, I'm a researcher, first and foremost. I did not design the device. A man by the name of Frank Sumption actually designed the device through some pretty incredible circumstances. And I was fortunate enough to be the first true investigator to use it.
Uh-huh.
And the synchronicity, or whatever you'd like to call it, came together, and it turns out that I was one of the people who was supposed to have this device. And what's interesting about it is there's quite a few people out there who've made replicas or tried some similar version of the idea and have no success with it. And the thing that we have to stress to people, and it sounds like we're being very selfish, but the truth is that it takes a very specific energy from the person who uses it to make it work. And, you know, it's a lonely world out there sometimes when you have to present to people and say, from what we understand from our communications, there's only 30 individuals on the face of the earth alive today that can truly use the device correctly. And it becomes a situation, especially when you deal with people in the paranormal field and you have that new toy on the block and everybody wants to use it. If there's only a few people that can make it work, you know, everyone becomes jealous and angry, and there's a lot of backbiting. But
I understand.
I'm so honored to just have the opportunity to use it that it's well worth it to me.
Could you tell us a little bit about the person who actually did the invention? And you said it was very unusual circumstances that brought that about.
Yeah, it's Frank is the person who actually created the device. And I think that there's a million different stories of how it all came about, but my father and I actually visited with Frank back in 2004.
And what's his last name?
It's Sumption.
Sumption.
And he is basically an engineer, and he does a lot of different things with shortwave radio and different ideas like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when he actually had the idea to do this, basically, from what we understand, he had voices that were out there through another experiment that were telling him how to build this device.
Mm-hmm.
And he built the device to their specifications and put it all together, and there it worked. And so many interesting things came through at that point. It's just incredible.
And how did you, did y'all discuss perhaps you would be the one that would start getting it into the world, or was this just you felt guided to do that afterwards? Or I actually saw just a few minutes ago you were on Fox TV, and I saw that little clip where y'all were trying to find the murdered students or something in the 1970s. But I saw a picture of the box itself with all the little knobs and everything.
Well, when it came down to it, and I think that the case that you're referring to is actually in Denver, Colorado. We were working on an unsolved homicide from 1970. We've been working on it since 2004, actually. But when it came down, it's kind of interesting circumstances because Frank and I actually started our relationship through a flame war over email. And basically that was, he had written me and said that his ideas were right about electronic voice phenomena, and my ideas were wrong. And we had this long flame war back and forth until he finally told me that he had this device. And when he told me about the device, the first thing that popped in my head was he's basically, to me, he was claiming that he had the completed version of Thomas Edison's telephone to the dead. And I thought, how outrageous is that? That's a myth. It's a fantasy. And I told him, I said, I will go to anywhere you are in the world, fly to anywhere you are in the world just to see it operate once. And I was being a smart aleck. I was really just, you know, trying to get his goat. And it turned out that he was 10 minutes from my office.
He lived 10 minutes away.
So we had this huge fight over the internet for so long, and it turned out that he lived
He
so
was
long.
Around the corner. That's great. That is very, obviously, synchronicity, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it definitely was. And you know, that's the thing, when we finally met up and had the opportunity. And when I first heard the device, I didn't think it worked at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to it, and I thought, boy, this is a real joke. I can't believe this. But he gave me one of these devices and said, take it out and test it in the field. No one ever has. And I thought, sure, I will. And I ended up taking it, after a long story, I ended up taking it to Atchison, Kansas, to the Sally House, which is probably one of the top, in my opinion, one of the top three hauntings in the world, not just in America. And I took it into this investigation, and lo and behold, these spirits' voices started coming through this device very clearly, and we were actually having conversations and arguments and counseling sessions. We collected quite a bit of EVP. Positive evidence in a very, very short amount of time. So from that point on, we knew there was something to it, and we kind of jumped out there and took it on every investigation. And when I used to get on radio shows and TV shows and talk about this, boy, did everybody just want to go right after me. I had
what do you mean?
Ticking box. They thought that it was some crazy thing.
I've gotten a little bit of that. I have felt a little bit of that, you know, that it's still just not into its own time yet, but it's definitely coming, Chris. There's no doubt in my mind. I will tell you briefly, a few months ago, someone contacted me and said they had heard me mention the telephone to the dead. I don't know how that happened, but I must have just been. And that would I talk to somebody on the phone and just talk to them about what I knew. And so I told the person I didn't know anything. And I said, if you want to come on my show, we'll get it, you know, going and discuss it and let other people call in. And I just wouldn't go any further because I knew it had to be through Blog Talk Show. And here you are. So but I wanted to ask you, Chris, when I heard you on George Norrie Coast to Coast the other night, I heard you say that you were talking to Thomas Edison on the other side.
And how crazy does that sound? But
I guess it could to some. Yeah.
When I tell people that Thomas Edison is my boss in all ways.
He's your boss,
like,
okay? I didn't hear that.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's funny because really, when it comes down to it, the thing that I was always interested in as a researcher long before the telephone to the dead was intelligent spirit research. And what I mean by that is I wanted to communicate with spirits who had crossed and were on the other side, and I wanted to get descriptions and messages and things to come across so that we could use these messages to hopefully understand more and become better people and things along those lines. That was really my goal.
Okay.
And what was interesting to me was the first stage of using the telephone to the dead, and we used to call it Frank's box for quite a bit, and a lot of people still do call it Frank's box.
Mm-hmm.
But we went out and started communicating with a lot of earthbound spirits. We started dealing with helping spirits cross over,
mm-hmm.
and working on crimes, the Lizzie Borden house, the case that you mentioned in Denver. And those were very intriguing things and amazing to me in every way. And then came along, of course, the portion where people wanted to communicate directly with family members, which is a whole different segment of what I do. But the one thing that really fascinated me was when I attempted to do intelligent spirit communication, and we'd set up groups to do this, and we would sit around and just ask about what was taking place on the other side, that's when I realized that Mr. Edison was involved in all this. And the way that
he come through and start talking to you right then?
Very clearly, absolutely. And the way he describes it is really as a team, as a spirit team. And there's several of these teams out there, and they are working on bridging the gap from one side to the other. And this device is really just the very beginning first stage of attempting to do this. It's not perfect by any means. There's a lot of noise and crackling and popping, and it takes interpretation from time to time, but it is the first stage. And Mr. Edison would come through, and he would actually talk about how we needed to move forward and the ways that we needed to move forward in preparation for 2012. Something I was never interested in beforehand, but this became a very deep subject for us. So, yeah, he did come through very quickly.
Well, does he? Can you actually just talk to him without the phone as well, or do you have to practice using the phone for reasons in order to enable the general public, I guess, eventually to be able to use it?
Exactly. The only communication I've ever had with Mr. Edison is directly through the device.
Through the device, okay.
Yeah, I've never had dreams or psychic visions or heard his voice. It's always directly through the device. And a lot of people ask me, well, where is this going? Where are we heading with this whole thing? I honestly don't know. I go on a day-to-day basis just like everybody else, and I try to work with it and assist him. And what's so interesting is that while Edison is working on this version, there's actually a team of people, live people, working with Tesla right now, attempting to build a better device.
So no way.
They're still, the competition between Edison and Tesla is still alive today.
Even when they're in the spirit world, they're both dead. They've crossed over, well, dead as we know them, right? Mm-hmm. And you're saying they're still competing.
They're still competing on the other side. And to me, and this is my opinion, I have no basis for this, but to me it's more of a friendly rivalry at this point. But they are absolutely still in the competition. And a lot of people, I think, believe that once we cross to the other side that we're this enlightened, bright spirit that moves through.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found unequivocally through the device is that spirits, when they move to the other side, are still the same person that they were here. We're still growing, we're still learning, and we're still that same person. So if there's a competition that rages inside of you when you cross, you're still going to carry on that competition. And those two seem to really still be at it.
They're still at it. Well, now, is Tesla, who do you think's going to win?
Oh, Edison. But I say that because I'm on his team.
Yeah, you better.
If I said otherwise, I'd be in big trouble. I wouldn't be able to hear
anything. I'm sorry, Tesla. this will make him work harder to be number one. Wow, isn't that? So they both have.
I'll tell you a funny little story that goes along with that just became reality to me. Lately that I made the realization on, and I'll just throw it in here very quickly. As I mentioned, I played in bands for years and years. I was a musician.
Uh-huh.
And what was interesting was I've always had a favorite band. It's a hard rock band called AC/DC, and I really enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the years, that was my favorite band. And there was a band in the 80s that came out by the name of Tesla. And I enjoyed their music, and I really thought they were great, but I realized that every time their music would be playing around me, horrible disasters would happen. Car wrecks, injuries, all these horrible things, to the point where I literally could not listen to this band. If it came on the radio, I'd have to flip it, and the only thing that seemed to reverse my luck, as crazy as this sounds, is listening to an AC/DC album. So this, again, just didn't really register with me, but recently, last year, I was at Edison's museum in in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was out there, I was looking at the walls and I was looking at all the different things, and I realized AC/DC equates back to Thomas Edison. And it all made sense at once, even at that time when I didn't make the realization. They were trying to tell me AC/DC is the way to go.
And, of course, you're going to get those messages in the language you understand, which is music.
Exactly.
And that makes absolute sense.
Yeah, it was exactly. And I never would have put two and two together until I was standing in the middle of Thomas Edison's museum. And it dawned on me, and I went, this is what you were trying to tell me. Got it.
Got it.
I said it out loud. So,
whoa. Well, whenever Thomas wants to talk to you, let's say you're doing something else and or you're even at a haunting or whatever, and is he able on the other side to, you know, somehow get to you and say, I need to tell you something else, or is it always you going to him?
Well, most of the time, I will set up times and sessions to do what I call intelligent sessions.
Oh.
And I used to do these more in groups. I'd have one or two people there with me. And lately, I've realized that there's really, with what I do, it doesn't matter how many witnesses are there, how many people see it, because you have your skeptics and your believers. So
mm-hmm.
I've realized that it's more of a positive energy for me to just sit there and do these sessions. So I try to do these when I get some quiet time. And I'll sit down and try to gather as much information from him at that point that I possibly can. What's interesting is while I'm out doing, whether it's lectures or I'm teaching or whatever the case might be, he won't usually come through to me at those points.
He won't?
No, it's usually him letting me go out and demonstrate. I almost feel like I'm out there proving his product for him from time to time, because he wants me to go out there and show people and let them see for themselves. And you know, the one thing that amazes me is that there's a lot of skeptics out there, a lot of people who have their opinions and things like that, and that's fine. But what's interesting is most of the people who tend to be critics are people who haven't witnessed me using the device. They've only heard about it or seen a video or whatever the case might be. But the people who are in person, whether it be college students or people who come to our events or whatever the case might be, most of those people walk away going, wow, I can't explain what just happened. That was my grandmother, brother, sister talking about the picnic in 1925, you know, very specific things that just could not be anything but what it is.
Wow. Well, I'm wondering now what will happen to psychics. Their jobs are on the edge if this telephone becomes available to everyone. Then I don't think people would use them as much, would they?
Well, that's a great question. I personally sit back and think about it, and again, this is our first generation of these
mm-hmm.
devices. This is really our first step. Now, it takes the specific energy to make the device work right now. We can hand it to someone on the street, and they would hear nothing and experience nothing from it. If I have the device or another one of these people have the device and bring it through, someone's going to have an experience. So is this something that's going to eventually become a household product? Is this going to be something that people can go to their local psychic or whatever the case might be and use? I don't know. Honestly don't know where it's going from here. Right now it's so specialized. I'm more hounded than anything else at this point.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Because like the light bulb, I would think in the day when Thomas Edison was telling everyone about it before he had done it or was getting ready to market it, we would have thought him a little off.
Insane.
That he would be able to flick on a switch and light something. I would have probably said, oh, yeah, he's off, you know, doesn't have both oars in the water or something.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's true.
Tesla. Do you feel like, you know, that you could talk to Tesla and he would give you any information if it would make this move faster, or would he just refuse?
It sounds so crazy when I say this, but I don't believe that Mr. Edison would allow contact.
Oh,
I think the waves would be narrowed to the point that we wouldn't make contact with him. And I would honestly be afraid to follow any advice that he had, because I think that would really be a betrayal to Mr. Edison.
That's funny you're talking about him in that regard, because I had read some time ago that Thomas Edison was extremely possessive of him, that other people tried to put their name on the light bulb and some of his inventions, and he fought ferociously to make sure that he did get credit, because he knew that he was the first one. I don't know if you had studied any of that or what, but he spent a lot of his time really fighting to make sure that he did get credit. So what you're saying just makes absolute sense, that still struggling, you know, to...
Yeah, I honestly have not done a lot of research on Edison. I've really learned, and again, I know it sounds crazy, but I've learned more about him just through his personality.
Huh.
And I have and this is a long story in a roundabout way, but I have a spirit technician, and a spirit technician is basically someone who's lived in our world, and they've crossed, and they have an interest in helping connect the two worlds. and I have a spirit technician by the name of Tyler. And I'm very good friends with his parents here on this side. I met them at an event, and Tyler came through to them, and it's a long story, but it's brought this whole family together, myself and his family. Either way, but Tyler was never a fan of Thomas Edison while he was alive. He died when he was 18 years old, never had a job in his life, but was always fascinated with communications and with shortwave radio and things along those lines. And it's funny because he's like my brother on the other side. He's the one who I trust to bring through messages and keep away things that I have issues with.
Okay.
And when I talk to him and I joke with him, I call Thomas Edison his boss. Because we all work on the same team. And when I say that to Tyler in an 18-year-old fit, he always tells me, "That's not my boss. Quit calling him my boss." And, you know, they work together, but they're not the best of friends, which is interesting. So
it is interesting, but
he refers to him as kind of a slave driver when it comes down to it, that he pushes too hard and he does all these different things. But, I mean, I don't think it's too bad. I think he kids more than anything else because he really enjoys the work that he does.
Does he enjoy? Well, do you – now, all right, let's say that people in the audience that listen to the show they want to contact you specifically, to contact a very specific person, be it a relative or friend, or let's say they have something they want to finish and find out about Mozart. I'm just bringing a name up. Could they do that through you, Chris, if they wanted to specifically contact? Let's just use Mozart as an example.
Yeah, they can do that, and it's limited, but I do have that ability. I'll backtrack a little bit about how this all happened. I, for the longest time, was not interested in doing what you would call readings for people.
Okay.
And that wasn't to be selfish or mean. It was really just the fact that I had a very specific interest in what I was doing in research, which, again, was the intelligent spirit communication, working on crimes, working on unsolves, and even helping earthbounds move through. And that was my focus. And it didn't change for me, but my focus split a little bit because I was invited to Atlanta, Georgia about 2 years ago. I guess it was about 2 years ago now, to the Ghost Chasers Weekend Conference by Chip Coffee. And he basically contacted me, said, "I can't pay you to come out here. I can't pay for your travel, but you're more than welcome to come and speak about what they call the Frank's Box, the Telephone of the Dead." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'd love to. I'd just like to come out there and show some people what this can really do." So I ended up going out and doing this weekend at this location. I showed up, and it was a group of quite a few people in this room. Mm-hmm. And as I got in there, I started feeling a little uncomfortable because there was a live radio show going on. And they approached me, and they said, "Would you mind, just to prove the device, if some people came forward and attempted to communicate with loved ones?"
Okay.
Now, mind you, I didn't like doing private readings with a person just sitting there with that person, let alone a public reading.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, "Oh, geez, I just really don't know if that's a good idea." So I agreed to it finally, and there were five people who were supposed to come up to a microphone and ask a question, get a response or not, and move on. So as time went on and we were starting to explain what this was doing, the entire room, the entire conference lined up around the room and wanted to step forward and have some sort of quote-unquote reading.
Okay.
Well, one by one, these people would step up to a microphone and ask a question. And each and every time that someone would step up to the microphone, they were given an answer or a message that only meant something to them. And it was probably the closest thing I've ever experienced to a religious experience because there were so many people crying and laughing.
Oh my God.
And it really amazed me as I stood in this room, and I was drained by the energy it took from me, but I stood there and people coming up and saying, "Thank you so much for the gift you've given me," so on and so forth. I did another event following that where I had a very similar experience, and I thought, wow, I don't know if I should really start doing these readings because I can't take away from my business to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had this angry protest of people saying, "You know, how dare you not give us personal readings? We're willing to pay for them. Why can't you do them?" I went to Chip Coffee because he's been a friend of mine for so long, and he's a psychic, and he's paid for readings and things along those lines. I said, "Chip, what do I do?" And he said, "Well, you have to give these people the readings, its messages, and he says, and you're going to have to charge them not for using the device or what's going on, but just for your time. You have to charge for your time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that makes sense. So I put up a very quiet bulletin about, well, I'm going to go ahead and do some of these things. And within the first week, I was booked for months out. And, you know, the great thing was that everybody who called, well, I don't want to say everyone, I'd say the great majority of people who contacted me were getting very private, personal messages, and they were able to make that final statement or get that last question answered or reconnect with someone. And it was just, today, it's still amazing. Every time I have the opportunity to do a reading, I'm blown away by it. So,
use Frank's box whenever you're doing it.
Absolutely. So what we'll do, regardless of where someone is in the world, it's very simple. I take the device and I turn it on.
Okay.
I put my phone on speakerphone, and I put a tape recorder or a digital recorder right in the middle of that, and I start the session, and it's like having, not to make light of it, but it's like having a conference call with people on the other side. You're able to hear their voices coming through, and I'm interpreting, and I'm doing the different things, and then I send the recording to these people so that they can have it and keep it. And
they can call you or email you, I guess, off of your website, right? How do they contact you? We could just go ahead and get that out. So
I can give the office number here if anybody's ever interested in doing a reading. It's area code 720-344-6150, and they can speak to anyone in the office.
And that's 720-344. What was it?
Yeah, 720-344-6150.
Okay. And they can contact you and set up an appointment. And you do this, you can do this over the phone. They don't have to come to you or that sort of thing, right?
Exactly. It's a situation where we really can do it from anywhere in the world, and that's the greatest thing. A lot of people like to come to my events or my college lectures and do a live reading, which is great.
Sure.
But we do have the ability to do it directly from over the phone. So it gives everybody access. Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, are going to want to contact you. And I'm very curious. We do have a caller who's been very patiently. They're either listening or they want to talk to you, and I will bring them on. I'm very curious what you see in the future for this, Chris, with your involvement. Do you foresee that you will actually be the one to start selling these devices to stores or are places that we can buy them online, or is it anywhere near that kind of mass production, or is it way ahead of its time as far as that?
Well, again, you know, I have to go back to what we were talking about before, where it seems like it takes a very specific energy for these to work. There is a group out there. There may be several groups. I actually try to stay out of it now, but there's several people who try to sell these devices, or at least a copy of them.
Oh.
And so far, the results that I've heard of have either been absolutely not that they don't work, or that there's problems, or that they capture some negative things through them. So there always is that possibility, and that's the thing that's a little scary too, is that I've worked with this since 2004, and I've had my positive experiences, and I've definitely made my mistakes and had my negative experiences too. So I am...
Well, when you say negative, you mean like you draw in maybe spirits that are earthbound or that sort of thing, darker, more heavy laden, or I'm not quite sure.
Any time that you're dealing with spirit communication, whether it's through standard EVP, which we talked about before, or through a medium or through the telephone, it's a dark alley. And when you open that up, you don't know exactly who you're dealing with.
Okay.
And it's taken me a long time personally just to build up my relationships with my technicians or the quote-unquote spirit operators on the other side. And I know there's several cases I could go into of people who've attempted to do this on their own and brought some extremely negative things through.
Oh, my gosh. It's almost like being on the Internet if you don't have a firewall.
Exactly. That's just what it's like. You can attract these viruses. But Fortunately enough, you can usually do something about the viruses on your computer. These other things are a little bit more difficult to deal with.
They're more difficult. Well, let's say someone does it on their own and they're not quite prepared. What are they going to do, Chris, if they do draw in a negative energy like that? What will they need to contact a spirit, someone that can get rid of it, like you, or what would they do?
Well, the only thing I can do from my experiences to this point is say that one person that I dealt with decided to. I had worked with her for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
With one of the true devices. And she got a lot of great results, and I think we were able to help her. And then she had the opportunity to actually go out and get one of these knockoff devices. And the reason that she did that was because she thought that she was very pure and she wanted to help people.
Sure.
And when she started using the device, of course, in the beginning it seemed like it was helpful and the different things, and then the curse words started to come through.
Oh, my gosh.
Much like using a Ouija board, and to the point where she used to turn it on, and the only thing that would come through would be negative, hateful things.
Woo.
Now I'm actually at the point where I'm working with her again to try to alleviate the situation she has. And I honestly don't know if we're going to be able to. This is all uncharted ground. But we, we've had some interesting things that have been tied with this. The church was very concerned when we first started using these devices for what purposes they were going to take place and what they would do. And I've always leaned more towards the scientific end of things and thought, well, if we can explore, let's explore.
Mm-hmm.
And not, we don't have to heed the warnings because we know what we're doing and so on and so forth. And found out, I guess, the hard way that they were right in the sense that it wasn't the original device that caused issues, but in some of the secondary devices, we are starting to see some of these negative, uncontrolled things come through. And no one knows exactly how we're going to deal with those. No one knows exactly how we're going to rectify the situation or if there is a way to rectify the situation.
Just like when we explore other, other planets or other parts of the Earth, and we're not sure what we're going to find, and once we find things we need to control or learn how to deal with, we do, but it's uncharted ground. You're absolutely an explorer into the spirit world, which is really, I'm so excited you came on the show tonight, because I know that you have a really, I shouldn't say, but I think it's a harder job as far as being kind of the pioneer out there, and but it sounds like you're handling it. I started to say, well, you go and hunt murderers and stuff, but that's pretty heavy too, so I don't know. That's not exactly. Did you plan to get into that, or were you rather drawn into that too, as far as trying to find, like, Lizzie Borden's, well, now, I'm not real familiar with Lizzie Borden, but it sounds like you were, that's part of your path, is to help solve mysteries, unsolved murders.
Well, it seems that way, and we deal with a lot of these unsolved crimes, and information comes through that no one knew. And whether the people choose to believe it or not believe it or whatever the case might be, facts that come through in cases are just absolutely incredible. And what I find with this is the murder's already been committed. It's been done. People have either been punished on this side or on the next.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's really the situation of solving these crimes per se, but it's the fact that, if we can come up with these solutions and these answers and provide true proof in theory, as to what it may take in place, it gives more validity to the device, and I think that's Mr. Edison's plan, is to actually be able to show people, not only can it do this, but this is what's going to take place. And again, for some reason, building to 2012 seems to be the whole goal here.
2012. Well, when you say that 2012, what do you personally see coming that you've picked up in a collective consciousness, Chris, that will happen in or around 2012?
Well, I think it's really all up for debate. No one really knows. In just going through and doing the intelligence sessions that I mentioned, that's always been a concern for me once it first came up.
Mm-hmm.
And I started asking the question, okay, I understand, I've always heard about the end of the Mayan calendar, and there's a lot of doomsday people that say it's the end of the world and so on and so forth. The impression, and that's all I can mention is an impression, that I get from it is that it's going to be a new beginning. It's going to be not destruction or horrible things happening, but I think if you look at the world around us right now and read the news each day, and you have all these interesting things, more ghost sightings coming, UFO sightings, creatures that no one saw before, all these different things that were believed by science to be absolutely false, there was no possibility. I think that what's happening is there's a veil, the thinning of the veils that's taking place. I think that we're all... there's several different civilizations out there and different beings and things like that, and I think the veil is starting to thin, and I think it's coming together. And I think that we're going to be forced into a change, and the people who have more of the open mind and the spiritual beliefs and things along those lines are going to be able to accept the changes that are going to be taking place, just in a new coexistence and a new understanding. And the people who are very hard-line science that don't believe anything is possible are going to have a very difficult time in adjusting to a new world.
A new world. Well, the open-minded people such as yourself, you will be, or you are actually guiding us to that new thinning of the veil, as you put it, which is exactly, that sounds like a really accurate way to describe it, because I'm going to go ahead. Would you mind if I bring up a caller and see what
sure.
they've been waiting? All right. Hello? Hello? Are you just listening? Hello? Oops. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Who am I talking to?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, yes. I didn't have a question or anything. I was just listening at
you. Are you just listening? That's fine. I'll go ahead and let you go right on.
But, oh, yeah, but, I mean, is there something that you wanted me to mention or...
Oh, well, I don't know if you had a question to ask Chris about the telephone to the dead, Frank's box.
I wanted to listen. I'm fascinated with...
Oh, okay. Well, we don't have much time left, so let me go ahead and let him talk a little more.
Okay. And if I have a question, it's okay for me to interrupt?
Oh, sure. I'll come back on.
Okay, great.
Okay. Hello, Chris?
I am here.
A lot of times people do, you know, listen over the phone, and you can't really tell if they're just going to be a listener or what. So
sure.
This person had been on since we first started, and I thought, well, we should go ahead and bring them on. I know I've had quite a reaction to your being a guest on my show, and I will be honest with you, there's a lot of cynicism, and that's to be expected. You know, that doesn't faze me at all, because I really feel, you know, I'm so excited. I don't know what to do. I just want to be able to use that telephone. And I wonder if you could explain, or I don't know if I'll be able to phrase this right. Basically, everything we do or think, it never goes away. Is that right? It's somewhere in the ether?
Correct.
So that really means that there's no privacy. We don't have any private thoughts. Is that right, Chris?
Well, when it comes down to it, that's the thought process, is that really it's like an open broadcast. That there's always someone up above us listening, someone who's monitoring, things along those lines. In my opinion, and that's all it is an opinion, I don't think that there's as much concern for what takes place on a day-to-day basis in our thoughts and minds. I think that really we're in a ladder system, and we're just here to grow and develop. I think that... whether it's on this side or even moving to the next side, we just have so much to learn. And that's really the concern, is that we eventually, you know, keep climbing that ladder to whatever the next consciousness is.
Just keep learning. Don't concern with the fact that it's all there. I would think, though, that, all right, let's say an unsolved murder or an unsolved, you know, a family, whatever, you know, it does kind of make your consciousness wake up to the fact that it is kind of an internal journey we are on. And so if you think of it in those terms, we might, you know, be a little bit kinder, more giving to one another. That would be my main thing there. But who else, like, that is a known name, could you mention, or if you can mention somebody that you might be communicating with on the other side?
Oh, there's been so many. You know, we've dealt with everyone, again, from Thomas Edison to John Lennon to...
Oh, John Lennon. Okay, wait a minute. let's bring him in. What did you talk to him about?
Well, actually, it's a very interesting story, and I'll make it the Reader's Digest version here. But when I first got the original device, which is a huge machine, mm-hmm. it was as big as the early computer towers.
Oh.
I had started telling some of my staff and my volunteers about this device, and of course half thought that I was insane and the other half were willing to give me the benefit of the doubt. And I'm based in Denver, Colorado, and I had a writer and an editor who actually lived in Oregon at the mm-hmm. time. And we were using Yahoo Messenger. I'm sure everybody's used those messengers from time to time to just communicate and talk.
Sure.
And we had the voice function on. Well, I had turned on the device behind me just to record a random session to see what would come through.
Mm-hmm.
And she heard the device going off in the background. And she goes, "Hey, is that machine you were telling everyone about?" I said, "Yeah, it sure is."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "You know, I was just wondering, is there a way that we could maybe communicate?" And I thought, how interesting is this? We're actually communicating over computers to communicate with the dad on the other side. So this device was playing in the background, and she basically asked if there was anyone there for her. Well, very quickly and clearly you could hear this English gentleman come through and start joking with her right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, she knew right away, and she was just taken back, and she said, "Oh, my God, I know who that is." And before she could even finish, the voice came through and said, "It's John Lennon. You're right."
Hey.
And she went on to explain to me at that point, she goes, "I've always had a fascination with John Lennon. I never knew why. I didn't know what the situation was, but I've always been completely fascinated with him." Well, she went back and forth and had a few more questions and had communication a little bit. And what was interesting was, and he stopped suddenly, and he goes, she was laughing and joking, and he goes, "There's someone here who wants to talk to you, love." And she goes, "I'm sorry." And it turned out that it was her mother.
Her mother.
Who had died when she was very young of cancer. And they were able to have a very emotional, short conversation going back and forth. Now, what the interesting thing about this is that this entire time she'd had this fascination with John Lennon and all the different things that went along with that, she would not have accepted her mother coming through instantly. It took him to introduce her mother to come in, to have that communication.
Oh, to get her attention.
Get her attention, absolutely. And it really just blew her away, and she was just touched from that point on.
That was it. That's what it brought the veil down for her, and she listened. That brought her to her attention.
She was
wow.
smiling and laughing at the point that her mother came through, so that her consciousness at that point wasn't focused on negativity and sadness and the emotion that went with it. She was very happy, and she accepted the energy of her mother's voice coming through.
That lifted her spirit. Wow. Well, good for John. And I wonder, so he's busy on the other side. I mean, he's still working. I wonder if he's writing music.
Well, you know, the way that they talk about it, it's definitely a circular universe when it comes down to it. And these spirits definitely are trying to help one another once they get to the other side. They're working in unison. And it seems that every time that I ask the question, which I still don't, I don't know why I even ask it anymore, I always get the same response. What is it like there? What does it look like? And
mm-hmm.
basically the response I get back is it's more beautiful than words can describe. Which I can understand to a certain degree, but I want the description. I want to see it. And what apparently, talking to some of my technicians, the way they describe it is that it's projection. Much like we do today in meditation, their energy will project out their reality. So should they choose in life, if they enjoyed going fishing in the afternoon, they can actually project out the thought process and the actual image and the activity of fishing in the afternoon.
Oh, so we are creating our own reality on the other side, just like we're doing here, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Energy creating reality. And there is much, there's no physical base there. Everything is based on energy. So when someone goes looking for quote-unquote heaven as a physical place, it doesn't exist.
Well, does it ever, ever end then? All right, let's say Thomas Edison gets the telephone out, you know, Frank Spock, and you're helping and so forth, and we're all attributing... And that gets going. What will he do then? Does he retire?
That's a great question. I have no idea. And I know that the one thing I can say for sure is that it doesn't end on the other side. I know that we still continue through. And I, from what I see, there seems to be many versions of life and death, even once we cross here. And we just continually have to keep working towards this goal, whatever that goal is. And a lot of people say it's utopia, perfection, whatever the case might be. But I think to become complete, you have to go through all these lessons throughout the life, your life and afterlife.
Okay. Because I had a psychologist on the other night, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, and he said that it's like, you know, you just keep repeating a grade over and over and until you get it. Which, you know, I hope that we don't have to keep repeating it over and over. But according to him, until you get certain things, that's you know, that's the course that he himself sees. And so, but it sounds like to me like someone that had John Lennon come and kind of open her up and wake her up, and that veil was removed, it would be kind of hard for that veil to go back up once she's totally open, wouldn't it, Chris? Or
it would take someone's energy to consciously try to destroy that. And, you know, once you have one of these experiences that you can't explain, I always use the example very quickly of our marketing director for the magazine, who's one of my best friends in the world. She started out as an attendee at one of our Ghost Hunter universities. Oh. And when I first got the device, she came with a group of friends, and basically I'd asked her to come early because she talked about how her father had passed away and that he was her life. And I said, if you'd like to, I'm testing this device. I'd like to see if we can bring your father through.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought I was insane. She said, yeah, right. I'll show him that you're crazy. So, and as bad as it sounds, and then I brought her in, and I turned this thing on, and she's basically kneeling in front of this computer tower is what it looked like, which is screeching and popping and all these different things. But she was willing to try anything at that point, I guess. And she was saying, Dad, can you hear me? Dad, it's me. Can you hear me? And not expecting mm-hmm. to get anything back. And he was from the Middle East, and he had a very distinct accent, I guess. And her name is Dina. And very clearly, everyone in the room heard, Dina. And she literally just collapsed.
Oh, my God. She just fell over.
It was the voice that she never thought she would hear again, ever.
My gosh. So she's totally sold on the knowledge that this is, well, now the university, we should quickly give out some of this information because I didn't touch on that. I've been so enthralled with this telephone. What is this university and where, how can people go to it? I mean, what does it do?
Sure. Let me just give the website first. That's the easiest way to find out about the events. It's hauntedtimes.com, www.hauntedtimes.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in these events. We have been traveling the United States since 2003, going to purportedly haunted locations, everywhere from the Lizzie Borden House to the Whaley House to the Tremont House in Galveston, Texas, and the list guy can go on and on and on to all the wonderful haunted locations we've been to.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is we actually go in and we teach a class called Ghost Hunting 101 and Ghost Hunting 102.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach people the fundamental basics of becoming a paranormal investigator from a scientific standpoint. Equipment, standards, positives versus false positives, so on and so forth. There's a dinner, there's an investigation with us that night. We take everyone out and show them how we actually investigate. And then there's a wrap-up at the end of the night where we do a certification for everyone who attends. And again, we've been running since 2003, literally going coast to coast on a weekly basis doing this. It's one of my favorite things to do. And we're actually going to be in Galveston, Texas, next weekend.
Okay.
And we're going to be teaching a class down there. So if anybody's interested, stop by the website. There's phone numbers on there and everything. I don't want to plug it too much, but it's a lot of fun.
Is it very expensive?
Telephone to the dead live.
Oh, yeah. You've got the telephone with you, and so people will be able to participate in that. And is it a very expensive course, or is it?
I believe the entire weekend, including meals and everything else, is $269, I believe.
Oh, that's not bad. My gosh.
So that, yep, 2 days, two seminars, two ghost hunts, two dinners. It's not too bad.
Wow. No, that's not bad at all. And in fact, I think that's great that people would be able to do all of that in a weekend and get to meet you and get to learn more and open their minds. And, you know, I just can't thank you enough for being a guest tonight. I'm just overjoyed that you actually were able to get on and share with the listeners. And the more we hear about the telephone to the dead, the Frank's box, we'll realize in my humble opinion, it's the telephone to the living. And I really, anytime you want to come back or share anything new or whatever, and if Tesla wants to come through, you're welcome to, Tesla. I don't want him to left out. So, I wish you the best of success in all you do.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on the show tonight.
And you have a great evening. And thank you, everyone, and I hope that you will be with us on Sunday night when we have 13-year-old Amelia Bloom, and she's just delightful. She's a singing sensation from Australia. She'll be making her debut. And you can look at all the other upcoming shows on Judy Joy Jones. And, again, thanks, Chris Moon. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you, Blog Talk. Bye-bye.